Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Sean Keeley.
Hello. Hello, people.
You all know Sean. He runs this place. He writes stuff.
I lurk.
He lurks. More often than not. So, this podcast is entirely dedicated to the shit show of today, and that was Mark Coyle basically trying to slip out of Syracuse under the cover of night, as it may seem, and head to Minnesota, of all places. Sean, your initial thoughts?
I mean, you know, it's tough to think about. I mean, my initial thought was just shock. I got the email. It was like this two-line statement from Kevin Quinn at Syracuse University saying Coyle was resigning for quote-unquote family reasons. And then I looked over somewhere else and saw that Minnesota had put up this weird statement that he was a finalist for the AD position.
Weirdest tweet.
It was so weird. And so, you know, you put two and two together and it's like, wow, really? And I had kind of forgotten his whole history with Minnesota. But once I realized that, I guess I figured this was a dream job scenario that we were dealing with. It's shocking. Like, you know, you can think whatever you want about, you know, how he did it and whether or not it's cool for him to do it. But just less than a year later to realize we're going to have to do this whole thing all over again. And it's going to be even more pressure now with the new AD because we're going to have in the back of our mind that, well, the last guy jumped out of here in less than a year. I think the concern now is whether or not are people just all viewing Syracuse as this stopover place where you kind of go for a little while until something better comes along?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear, and it's an odd one because I think part of it stems from what we've discussed on the podcast and everywhere else before is that the Jim Boeheim syndrome that has kind of permeated the fan base and the school and everybody else is that, you know, if anyone who leaves is a traitor and anyone who stays is the best person ever. Now, obviously, you know, Jim is helped by the fact that he has results to back up a stay of this, you know, length. But there's very few people who stay at one job and please everybody at it for almost the entire time. I think what we're seeing now, though, is you know what you were describing. Syracuse turning into a bit of a stopover. I mean, we'll see what happens with Mike Hopkins, is whether or not that can get to the basketball program. What I'm noticing, though, is that this isn't something that necessarily affects other private schools, so I'm wondering what else is going on here, that Syracuse is getting, you know, bitten by something that I'm not really seeing as much at Northwestern or Vanderbilt or many of our other ACC brethren. Is this because most of them aren't as good at athletics as we are? Or is there something that's just because Syracuse is not necessarily a destination city?
You know, two things. Just stepping back for a second, I was thinking about how for a few generations of Syracuse fans, you pretty much had the same three people in charge of the three most important SU sports jobs for decades. You had Krauthammel was the AD for what, 30 something years. Boeheim, obviously. And then you had Pasqualoni, who was the coach for like, I don't know, 16, 17 years. And so it does kind of feel like we went through this period where even when we didn't like the people, we could depend on them in this weird way. And it's almost like now we're grown up and we're realizing that the adults are not quite the same or for whatever reason, it's just a different scenario. But getting back to your question, I mean, I think unfortunately, you know, the more I thought about originally when I heard Coyle went to Minnesota, I was like, Minnesota, really? But then I was like, you know what? It's Big Ten. They're bringing in more money. It's a little bit higher profile, whether we want to admit it or not, at least in terms of football. So, you know, you got that. You mentioned Vanderbilt. That's an SEC school. And the ACC is great, but, you know, facts are facts. Big Ten and SEC are on another level. And so, you know, I think you've got that. I think Syracuse, yeah, I mean, the city of Syracuse, nobody's going to be putting Syracuse on their list of the 20 greatest college towns in America. And, you know, and it's hard to compete with a lot of these other places. You know, a lot of private schools are in these either these beautiful college towns or these huge cities, and you've got that to worry about. And there is kind of a regionality to Syracuse as well. I think being up by ourselves there in upstate New York, I you know, I think if you're not a Northeast person, that probably isn't, you know, it's kind of hard to really dig into that. I could totally understand, you know, why somebody who is not from the Northeast would attach themselves to Syracuse, New York, and Syracuse University. But all that said, you know, I think, unfortunately, a lot of it comes down to money. You look at what Coyle can make at Minnesota versus what he was probably making at Syracuse. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's just more money, donors giving more, it's just a different environment at a lot of those other schools. And Syracuse, for whatever reason, has just been behind the times for a while in a lot of different areas, and is starting to catch up, but, you know, we're seeing how quickly things change.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and the fact that it's 11 months, I think, is the jarring part. I mean, I don't think anyone would have batted an eye, you and I included, if Coyle left after 4 years and a successful run turning around the football program. I think, once again, this is kind of the Doug Marrone syndrome of, well, you left before the job was done. Like, you did some good stuff. You hired the coach. Okay, but now what's next? I think it gets to the weird mentality again, though. Like, and you were right. It is this regional kind of Northeast, you know, closed. I mean, does Syracuse have to move to a kind of isolationist policy of, like, you know, only quote-unquote our guys? It seems like more and more of the fan base, the more we're kind of seeing coaching turnover in recent years and administrative turnover, is that everyone within the fan base, or at least a good portion of the fan base, is saying, you know, bring in our guys and only people to get us. I mean, Sean, do you think it's that hard to get quote-unquote us as a group, that we can only hire people who have been at Syracuse before? Or is this something that, is this maybe like a silly portion of the fan base that is only gaining steam because of how much change we've had?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, what does that mean? You want to hire Dan Conley to run to be the head football coach just because he went to Syracuse? Like, that's silly. You know, I think I do think there is probably something to be said for someone who is a Northeastern person. Only because, and I feel myself rolling my eyes internally saying that, but I think what that means to me is, you know, like look at Mark Coyle. Like, he's a guy who was just, we realize now, was just never destined to be here long term. And it's the same fear that it's the same concern I have for Dino Babers, that he's just not the kind of person who I expect to plant roots in Syracuse, New York. I think if he does well here, in 3 or 4 years, if a bigger, higher profile program comes calling, I fully expect him to go. I don't see him as the kind of coach who's going to be here a decade from now, one way or another. So I think there is something to be said for finding somebody who has some sort of roots, you know, whether it be in New York or just the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic. Just somebody who is of the region and kind of has a basic feel for it. And I don't know, like, I maybe this, that's oversimplifying it, because, you know, look, at the end of the day, what we want is to win. That's what we want. And so if Dino Babers turns us into a winning football program and leaves after 4 years, so be it, because he did what he came here, what we wanted him to do. And you can't have everything. You can't have a Jim Boeheim for every sport. So, you know, I think you just kind of have to make peace with the fact that at certain times you're going to be hiring a mercenary who considers Syracuse a bullet point on their resume. And if they do well, then they did what they were here to do. And in the meantime, I think, you know, for athletic director, I do think it behooves us to look for somebody who is willing to put down some roots here. You know, we always had that concern with Gross that he was going to go back to the West Coast. And, you know, he did stay here for a decade, but we always wondered. And, you know, we just saw it with Coyle. So I would imagine that we're going to be looking for somebody. You know, it won't be the most important thing, but considering somebody who has some sort of regional bias for this area, I think is going to be on the minds of the chancellor and the board for the next hire.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, you look at just kind of a lot of the guys we were tossing around names with, and unfortunately, you know, mostly literally guys. I know I'm starting to see some female names. I think Syracuse is doing a good job of, at least from the search list that we saw for both coaches and for ADs, it seems like that they are expanding search. I think Severud's done a great job of really trying to vet the best possible candidate, regardless of who that person is. And if it ends up being another old white guy, then I hope that old white guy is successful. But I also wouldn't mind a fresh perspective at Syracuse. I think that's kind of the one thing that, you know, we talked about a little bit with Babers, but I think, you know, gets even more to it with the AD. I think in general, like, you look at our search process, I think it has to be, like you said, it has to be in consideration, but it can't, you know, trump all things. I mean, that's where a guy like Sean Frazier, who's over at Northern Illinois, comes up a lot, because he has the roots here, but he's not exclusive to them. I think, you know, Babers is a guy who, and Babers had spent all of his career in Texas, or all of his career in the Midwest near Bowling Green, or where he started out here out west, then, you know, maybe you're a little bit wary of him. But I think fans were able to digest it, and the school was able to digest it, because he is just well-traveled. And I think, to me, I wouldn't mind somebody well-traveled, but then that depends on, you know, how you classified Mark Coyle. Did you consider him well-traveled, or just, you know, an up-and-comer? I think in today's, you know, athletic environment, given all the money that's exchanging hands and all that, it's going to be tough for a program like Syracuse that isn't at the pinnacle of the sport to hire an up-and-comer who's not so much of an up-and-comer that they leave before the job's not done, but like 75% of the way there, I think I'd be okay with, or at least 60. I think that Coyle, I think, is more of a cautionary tale of, don't hire the guy that everybody's talking about as the next guy, because he's going to leave you, like, very quickly, the second things start looking pretty nice at Syracuse.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, if you can't really fault Severud and the board for their hire on Coyle, because clearly he is a extremely hot commodity. Just like that, he's the fifth highest paid athletic director in the Big Ten. So it's not that Syracuse did a bad job with Coyle, but I think you're right. I think it's, you know, instead of looking for the guy who everybody's talking about, I think it's about finding the person who is like the up and comer, who's, you know, you've seen really good things from them, and you know, has started to make a name for themselves, but isn't quite at that level yet where, you know, they're just going to be constantly getting calls from search firms. So I agree. I think, you know, I think about the Ivy Leagues, I think about Patriot League, and those, you know, I don't know specifics too much myself, but I just wonder about people in those areas and whether or not there's some people there who, you know, would view Syracuse as an enormous possibility and something they would be excited about and want to do for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, any hire, whether that's at college athletics or a blog or a marketing firm, it's all a gamble. And I think that's a lot of decisions that you're going to make as an organization. It's going to be a gamble. I think if you're looking at it not only as a gamble but as an investment, you know, you are looking at not who is everyone talking about now, but who everyone going to be talking about in 5 years. You know, you make that investment for the long term, and I think, yeah, you can't fault Severud or anyone on the board for that hire. I think Coyle was the right choice, and it's one that I think a lot of us thought that he was kind of out of our league because he was bound for bigger things. But yeah, I think that, you know, looking at some of the, I mean, a lot of the Ivy League programs have done a lot with very little of late. I think you can look at, you know, Patriot League. I think Colonial Athletic has some great teams If you want to look down south, there's plenty of schools that have done a lot in a minimal amount of time, especially some of the more recent teams to move up from FCS to FBS, and have done it with, you know, thrifty spending, great hires. I mean, yes, they've had access to a recruiting ground that Syracuse doesn't on a local level, but, you know, I think that the number one priority, and I think this is why, I think most importantly, they're going right back to the old list, has to be football. And obviously, Coyle put us on the right track. I think Babers is a great hire. I just hope, I think less now than him getting hired off to a big program right away, I'm now more worried that he feels a bit of betrayal from Coyle that could tinge, I guess, how he views this job going forward.
Yeah, it's you don't want to read too much into his reaction, you know, when he found out the news, because regardless of anything, that is a shocking thing to find out. You walk out of a meeting and you're told by a reporter that your boss just up and left. So I'm trying not to read into that too much. But I agree. I mean, you know, he comes here assumedly under the idea that Mark Coyle's his guy, is the guy who, you know, he fired Scott Schaefer so he could hire Dino Babers, basically. And, you know, they're going to make or break their reputations together. And then Coyle up and bolts. And, you know, it does make you wonder if it's the kind of thing where if Babers does turn the program around and he's doing really well in year two, is that the kind of thing that makes him leave after year two rather than stay through year four? You know, and there's so many other factors involved. But yeah, I definitely wonder about that. But I think the most interesting thing about it is how much credit Coyle is going to be getting. And we've already heard it. Like I just heard the Minnesota president talk about how Coyle led Syracuse to two Final Fours this year. And it just makes you realize like, wait, I don't think he had really anything to do with any of that.
Nope,
and
nope.
Like all
didn't
the
coach, didn't do anything.
No, didn't do anything. And like all the success of the women's programs and the Olympic sports and all that stuff, like all of that, you know, say what you want about Doc Gross, and we were never his biggest fans, but the dude laid the foundation for all that stuff to happen. And it just so happened to break right the year after he left. Under Coyle's watch, and Coyle will get the credit for it on his resume, but you know, I wouldn't necessarily say all of the things that happened under his watch were really because of him.
Well, it's funny too, and this isn't to bash Coyle. I think we had our comments and tweets and such about that earlier today, and for listeners yesterday. But you know, Coyle kind of has a habit of piggybacking on other people's of what other people built. I mean, it's not like he came in and built Boise State into what it was. He was stuck around Boise State for 3 years after Boise State had already established itself as, you know, one of the, if not the premier, you know, group of five program. And obviously, like, maybe he gets a little bit more credit for the basketball program, but still, same deal. You know, the basketball program built a new arena. They started recruiting better. They made great hires. They made themselves, got themselves into the tournament, you know, after kind of muddling around as a WAC program for years. So yeah, it's funny how, it's not that I'm wishing him ill at Minnesota, but I do think Minnesota comes with some challenges that obviously he's prepared for. He wanted to go there, but I don't necessarily, I want to see what happens when he walks into a situation where the only advantage from a job standpoint is money. And I don't think he's had access to that part of the gig in his two previous, you know, AD roles.
Yeah, and, you know, walking into kind of a mess with the basketball program and Patino, and he's got some scandal going on, and, you know, he kind of comes in now with this reputation of clearing house on guys he doesn't, that aren't his guys, and bringing in his own guys, so it'll be interesting to see how he deals with that. But yeah, it's the first time, I guess, he's coming into a situation where the foundation hasn't been laid for him. And so yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm sure Syracuse fans will be keeping an eye on what happens there for various reasons. And maybe we'll get to see him in another third tier bowl one of these days.
Yeah, maybe we'll get around to scheduling a 2017 or 2018 opponent. That could also happen.
sometime around 2020 we'll do that.
Christ. I know, of course, Sean and I, one of the first things we brought up when he was fired, or not fired, when he left, was the fact that, you know, nothing had gotten done on the scheduling front. And it's, I'm not going to say this is the only reason, is that him leaving was the only reason that we didn't schedule anybody, but Coyle usually deflected questions about scheduling, even from the first interview. When I talked to him, you know, back when he was hired, I think, you know, he's been asked a couple other times and really kind of gave some vague answers. Dino Babers really didn't have much to say about it either. He had some random Team A versus Team B conversation that has yet to yield any results because we haven't heard an announcement. And I know some, you know, regional rivals. I know the Rutgers kind of reshuffled the deck chairs a little bit today with their schedule and with Temple, and Buffalo was added to Rutgers' schedule, and Buffalo now has limited dates left. I mean, I don't even care who we play anymore. Like, I mean, I do, but I don't. I just think we're looking at a late summer announcement at best for any future scheduling. And I mean, Sean, you've talked about this at length. I've talked about this at length. But like, what do you think the institutional problem is at Syracuse when it comes to scheduling? Because it can't just be put on change and some staffing reshuffling.
Honestly, I've been trying to figure this out for years. It made sense under Gross, in that Gross was very clear that he wanted to schedule high-profile games so that Syracuse could be on TV and get exposure. And we would always say, well, what's that worth when you lose by 40 on national TV and confirm to everyone that you're not very good? What does that do for you? But whatever, that's our argument. But as for like what, you know, and then we found ourselves in this mess. I think, what was it, like 2010, something like that?
Yeah, in 2010 it was bad. And then when West Virginia left, we had to add the road game at Missouri because West Virginia left and TCU decided not to come because they went to the Big 12. So then we had one less conference game than we thought we were going to have.
And then I think the year before that was when we played two FCS teams.
Which worked out.
Yeah, which worked out, but is like...
But it didn't, but it might not.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's not, and I don't know, I don't think you can do that now, or you can, but one of them doesn't count.
One of them doesn't, yeah. I mean, even then, one of them, we basically were a 6-5 team in the eyes of bowl committees.
Right.
But, I mean, now at this point, I would think that if you scheduled two, because of how shitty the bowl situation's turned into, where you have 5-7 teams joining, I feel like if we went 7-5 with... If we went 6-6 with two FCS teams, I feel like we'd be given priority over a 5-7 team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so to answer your question, I don't know. I mean, I think because Syracuse was so cash-strapped for a long time, there's a hesitancy to do the whole, like, we'll pay you to play thing. So maybe they're just kind of banking on, you know, another school saying, like, hey, we got a opening we need to fill. We'll pay you to play. Like, I don't know. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And, you know, if we're just going to go and fill that spot with a team that we're probably not going to beat, it's just such a self-fulfilling prophecy of mediocrity. And I think, you know, one of the things about Coyle that hurts his cause right now is because he was so vague and because he was so quiet and behind the scenes, he leaves a lot open to interpretation about, like, well, what were you doing? Like, what were you doing for the last year? Because, you know, like, the football, there's nothing really to show for it in terms of football scheduling. You know, we put a couple PR things in place for the upcoming season, but nothing really all that tangible. You know, obviously hiring Babers, but, you know, as far as big picture stuff, there's really not that much there that wasn't there before he got here. So I think that kind of is why it's such a question mark, and why part of the reason I think people are so kind of bothered by him leaving is because this sense of, like, we don't even know what you did when you were here. So, like, now that you're gone, what do we do? Like, we feel it's like we've just wasted a year when we could have scheduled, you know, we could have set up all these great home and homes and put ourselves in a position to win more football games.
I mean, I've said this before. At this point, I agree with everything you just said. At this point, I've told SU, I'm willing to do it for free. I will make the phone calls, and I'll do it for free. I don't care. Just tell me how much money I can spend of yours, and then I'll just do it. I'm fully dedicated to getting us a schedule that makes sense, because you look at the article I posted the other day, like, of the, you know, early top 25. We're facing four of them, including three in the top 10. If you looked at that top 25 and looked at next year's schedule, we're facing four teams in the top 25 and like five in the top, no, four teams in the top 10 and five in the top 25. I mean, this is unfortunately too, because of the way the rotation works for us when it comes to the extra coastal team. You know, we kind of lucked out with teams like Virginia and a Duke team that seems to be trending a little bit down. At the beginning, and now, you know, we got a gauntlet of Virginia Tech with an offense similar to ours and still the same top 25 defense. You've got a Miami team that's obviously much better now than they were before, now that Mark Richt's there. And you got a North Carolina team that's playing better than it has in decades. So that's the next 3 years of you know, rotating coastal team. All those teams could easily be in the top 25. Because we keep, you know, we have LSU next year. We got Notre Dame every other year from 2014 through 2018. Luckily, there's a little bit of a break, but for the time being, we're going to be facing them every other year. I just think we can't fix what has already been done. That's fine. I'm not saying take these games off the schedule. At this point, I'm saying just make sure the other games are wins, because as we've discussed, you know, Syracuse is going to win four games every year and lose four games every year. In nine out of ten seasons, what happens in those other four? Why can't we make sure that those other four are wins, or at least we're getting two out of them so that we can get to a bowl?
Yeah, we've had this conversation so many times, and I have yet to see any. I mean, I've heard people say why not to do it that way, but the results don't back that up. So I throw my hands up at this point. I just don't know. It's such a hard thing to really get into, because it's almost like you have to understand what the philosophy is first and then go after the teams that you want. But we've already put so many things in play for the upcoming years. And like you said, the ACC schedule, that we've painted ourselves into such a corner of just never being able to get out of this, and it's frustrating, and I just feel like it's just never going to happen. Like it, and if it does happen, there'll be all these complaints about how we're not playing good games, and why should I go to the dome? And like, okay, then go to the dome to watch the number five team in the nation come in and beat us by 30. Like that, great. Go ahead and do that again. I would so much rather watch Syracuse win. But, you know, what do I know?
Apparently nothing, because nothing. How would you be able to cover this team from anywhere outside of Central New York, Sean?
How dare I?
Or me, for that matter. Before we jump into a little bit more, as is customary on this podcast, here's a talk about beer. So, Sean, what have you been drinking of late?
Oh, what did I just drink? I just found this one... what's it called? UNITA?
Oh, yeah. They're down in Louisiana. Wait. No, they're not down in Louisiana. They're the one in Utah.
In Utah. Yeah. So I found this this summer ale that they have that just randomly showed up in the local shop in town. And I've been enjoying that. A little bit ahead of schedule, but I guess so is the weather here, so it doesn't really matter. I think it's summer solstice. Is that it?
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. So that's been my go-to for the last week.
Nice.
How about you?
I got a lot of drinking to do this weekend, but this past weekend had some Beechwood Brewing Thrill Seeker, as I mentioned here before. Beechwood Barbecue down in Long Beach is fantastic, and they have a very, very good, their staple IPA is Thrill Seeker, but they do make tons of others. Got that bottle about 3 days old, and If you're in the IPA game, that's really what you're looking for. Anything kind of 2 weeks or less is going to be your freshest drink. Grab some Smog City Kumquat Saison. Recently won an award at the Great American Beer Fest. for Fruited Saison, had a decommission from the brewery. They got rid of their original brew system after a 7.5 year run. So this was the last beer that they brewed on it, hence the name, decommission. Just kind of a little bit of a pale lager. Really enjoyed it. It wasn't a straightforward pale lager, but it was a good one nonetheless. And beyond that, picked up a bottle of Pliny the Elder, which is always enjoyable. And then finally opened up, I had a bottle of Bourbon County brand barley wine sitting around from Goose Island from December. So decided to put like 5 or 6 months on it. And yeah, turned out pretty well. Very enjoyable drink, as Dan Lyons alluded to last week when he had just the standard Bourbon County brand stout. They just do such a good job, and they were like one of the original barrel aging breweries in America. They did just do such a good job of hiding that ABV. It's hanging around like all of them are somewhere between like 12 and 14, and you feel like you're just drinking a standard stout for the most part.
Man, you are so far ahead of me on fancy stuff. I got to catch up on. I'm taking notes here.
Zed, Sean, just join Untapped. You can see all the stuff me and Dan are drinking all the time.
I know. I'm very lazy about all that stuff.
Or just follow Aaron Goldfarb's Twitter feed.
Well, yeah, that I always see Aaron, what he has to say, and I'm like, all right, I'll try that. And then I go to the store, and I'm like, well, I can't find it. So
can't find this, because it's either only in New York or it's $40 a bottle.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I really enjoyed Aaron's – did you read it a couple weeks ago? Aaron, for those listening, Aaron wrote an article about the how Edward Forty Hands got started.
Oh, no, I missed that.
Yeah, he. I forgot what site it was for. He writes for a few. It was about the origins of Edward Forty Hands, and he like tried it and then like quit like halfway through the first 40. Which, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, at 28, I couldn't. Him at 37, I couldn't imagine.
No.
Getting through that entire. I mean, I never bothered with it in college because I had other drinking adventures to go through. That was just never something that like appealed to me. I know one of my buddies like headbutted through a wall while doing it once. Just never appealed to me, but I've always been fascinated by the desire to participate in just games like that where you know you're going to be inflicting physical harm on yourself.
Well, I think you might need to go see a therapist about that.
maybe. So I guess, Sean, for you, switching back to our AD search now, do you have a different list in terms of, like, what are three things that you want to see from this new AD, or is it really just the same as last time? It's fix football, figure out a way to get more people attending, and I don't know. I guess I'm wondering what that third thing is, at least off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think the first two are definitely high priority. And I think maybe the third thing is, you know, now that you've got this really complete athletic program for the first time ever, how do you maintain it? How do you keep all, you know, most of these coaches happy? How do you, you know, do you have the facilities you need? And, you know, we've gotten to the point now where Syracuse is, as an athletic program, is you know, mentioned in the same sentences as some of the best in the country. So how do you stay there? Like, how do you compete with a Stanford? How do you compete with, you know, all these big-time programs? And maybe you don't. Maybe this year was just kind of like an anomaly, but I think it does good things for Syracuse University in general and benefits – you know, everyone to keep as many of these programs at a high level as you can. But all of that said, as I always say, when I walk into the bar wearing my Syracuse hat and the guy in the Ohio State hat and the guy in the Michigan hat turn around and look at me, they don't ask me how the field hockey team is doing. They make fun of me because of how the football team is doing. So that is always going to be the top priority until it's fixed, if it can ever be fixed. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, basketball is, as crazy as it is basically on autopilot. It's just going to keep doing what it's doing, at least until Boeheim retires, and then we'll see how that goes. But you've got a couple years at least before that happens. And so in the meantime, how do you just keep getting people to show up for football games, and how do you turn 4 wins into 5 wins and 5 wins into 6 wins, and how do you make bowl games a regularity, and you know, how do you compete with Louisville and Clemson and Florida State?
You know, it's funny. I feel like earlier this year I was doubting the autopilot thing, and then obviously we made a Final Four that we weren't supposed to. But it is you and I, was it you and me were talking about it, but we might have pulled in some other folks. We were saying, like, why is it that in down years, I forgot when this article went up, but like, why is it that in down years, North Carolina and Kentucky and Duke can still make the Final Four, but we can't?
Yeah.
And it's odd that we haven't revisited, because I think both of us just kind of blocked out the article. and then, like, now here we are, like, we did it. So, yeah, I think I'm finally on board with, you know, obviously we'll see what happens with Hopkins. But right now, like, yeah, Syracuse is on autopilot. Doesn't matter who comes in, who goes out. And I think we're all resigned to Malachi Richardson leaving at this point. Syracuse has a chance to make a Final Four any season because Jim Boeheim is a better in-game coach than he'll ever be given credit for.
Yeah.
The defense is incredibly hard to prepare for on short notice. And Syracuse can bring in better talent than all but maybe, you know, 5 teams on a yearly basis. And, you know, you look at Villanova. Villanova is not a school that, you know, was out-recruiting us by any means. I mean, they weren't out-recruiting North Carolina. They weren't out-recruiting Oklahoma of late either, nor a bunch of other schools. And yet Villanova was able to do it with four-year guys. That used to be our model. I don't think it is anymore. But, Syracuse has a system that works, and it's going to be very, very interesting to me. I'm viewing the future now for Syracuse basketball with much more promise than I was before, and that might seem weird given the 4-5 mark under Mike Hopkins this year.
Yeah, I mean, I totally remember talking about that and about how, you know, we just went into this season and it was like, man, we're just going to be kind of mediocre and, you know, we're not going to make the tournament. And, you know, and then when Hopkins took over, things really seemed to stand still. And it just felt like, you know, what is it about us that we just can't get over that hump? And then the NCAA tournament happens, and it was like, no, dummies, we are at that level. Like, and I think now, like, you can take this year and really take, like, the last, I don't know, 7-8 years and look at that and see just how impressive it has been. And I'm sorry, but whatever you think of Jim Boeheim, you got to give him credit for just how crazy, like, the program has just gone to another level. Say what you want about this regular season and the sanctions and all that. You can't beat, well, you know, 2 Final Fours and Elite Eights and number one rankings. It's just a level that Syracuse basketball hasn't been at. And, yeah, I mean, at this point, it's almost like, short of some sort of catastrophe, which, you know, this season felt like there was one, we've got a shot every year. We might not be the team, we might not be a top 10 team every year, but we go into the NCAA tournament, and as this year proved, anything can happen. So yeah, I think for the new AD, it's kind of like, it's like how Boeheim said that, one of the great things when he started was that Krautemel really didn't care about basketball. He only cared about football. So he was very hands-off, at least according to Boeheim. So Boeheim kind of got to do his own thing. And Boeheim doing his own thing tends to get us into trouble every now and again. But he's also proven that he can handle it. And so, yeah, if you just want to give me an AD that puts their focus on football and worries about, you know, the rest of the program as a whole, that's all I'm interested in.
Too true. And I think the one thing from a point you were making earlier about, you know, being mentioned with the Stanfords and Virginias of the world, what I'm curious about, and I don't think there's any way to, you know, find this data like you can with championships, but how success in all those sports and Capital One Cups and Directors Cups increase applications and the quality of those applications. I mean, obviously Stanford and Virginia are world-class institutions. Stanford is one of the toughest schools in the world to get into. So it's tough to really, I mean, they win that those awards, you know, 9 out of every 10 years. So again, tough to really draw that line one to one, but I would like to see, you know, based on this resurgence, or not resurgence, that assumes they were ever there, but based on the arrival of these non-revenue sports, I am very curious to see, you know, not just the quality of applicants and how that's changed, but, you know, perhaps the diversity of applicants, and things like that, that, you know, maybe some of it gets tied to recent Final Four runs or what have you, but I would like to see if there's any way we could draw a correlation, for Syracuse at least, between these, you know, total successes for the athletic program and the overall, you know, quality of student we're bringing in.
Yeah, I mean, I that's the thing. It's like the better the university, the more it benefits everyone, the more it gets people interested in SU. So it's in our best interest. Even if you don't care about women's soccer or field hockey or volleyball, it is in the best interest of all Syracuse fans for the program to be very healthy and for the department to be perceived as, like, if you're an athlete, you want to go here. And we're always being talked about. We're always on TV somewhere. And we're always in an NCAA tournament somewhere. And so that all of those things have big effects that we don't always notice. And so, yeah, definitely a critical thing for the next AD.
Agreed. And you know what? I think it's, going back to what you said, it's critical for the next AD because, you know, look at what happened here. Like, Syracuse is now seen as a place that, like, Virginia, yes, their football team struggles, but do people really talk about Virginia football struggles? No, they talk about how complete and how successful the athletic program is. You know, Stanford football knocks on the door, has not been able to get over the hump. The basketball program does not do what it should be doing. Do people worry about that? No, they worry about the fact that they're succeeding with high academic standards and that they're competing, you know, throughout the athletic department. I think people are starting to come to grasp with this because, you know, Syracuse hasn't dealt with this in the past. We've always been a two-sport, three-sport school for so long. And I think, you know, when Coyle showed up, we were getting to this point where we're going to be something you could sell in the full athletic program. I think we were, you know, 90% of the way there when he arrived, but it wasn't something that was national knowledge. Like, now you look at the national championships this year, the Final Four runs, how it looked like nearly every team made the postseason. You know, that's something that you can market to guys. And, you know, maybe we end up, because we don't want to end up in the same situation that we did with Coyle, maybe we don't end up going for a top-tier guy. But if we were, I would think that the top tier guys are looking more and more at Syracuse now because we have, you know, this seemingly commitment to everything that very few schools can really boast outside of the, you know, the typicals, the Virginias, the Stanfords, the North Carolinas, and the Notre Dames, among some others.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of like the reversal of what we were talking about earlier, where instead of the up and comers, the people who have really established themselves but now want to kind of make their own mark at their own place, you know, where it'll be remembered that they built the program. Maybe that's some the kind of people to look at as well.
Good call.
And you know what? I think that wraps us up, Sean, unless you had kind of any other parting thoughts. I mean, obviously we're going to have plenty more on the site throughout this week as we kind of, you know, undergo now the second AD search in blog history, just 1 year after the first one.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say, and I'll probably touch on this in a piece on the site, but if I were going to give Mark Coyle any advice, I would say, on the day when you completely blindside your employer that you've worked with for less than a year, it probably isn't the best thing to make the cornerstone of your introductory press conference about transparency and how important that is to you. And that was something that it was a cornerstone of his introductory press conference at Syracuse as well. And it's almost like I want to say I don't blame him totally for how it went down, because anyone who's ever left a job to take another job knows that it is a really hard thing to do, and you kind of have to play your cards close to your chest and all of that. But I guess just don't be the guy who then turns around and talks about how important transparency is. Like that, that's kind of what it is. Like, don't set yourself up to be that guy. Just, you know, just do your thing. Right? And that's it.
Good words of advice. I think a lot of people could take that, even if you aren't Mark Coyle. And I hope because of the show that he, and saying, not to say that it's disingenuous, but given the show that he put on today, at his introductory press conference, and the almost tears and the, you know, emotional and heartfelt everything, I would hope that he sticks around long enough to deliver on those things. If this truly is the place that, that you're hell-bent on being, and your family feels so, you know, so much touching emotion toward, and you dream of your daughter singing the fight song and all that, like, I hope for your sake that you can deliver on it, because I feel like if I, from what I know about Minnesota fans, I would feel like they're just as unforgiving about those sorts of backstabbing and betrayal as we are.
Probably.
All right, Sean. Thanks for hanging out. Always a pleasure when you can stop into the podcast.
Yeah, gotta do it more often.
Yeah. So that was Sean. I'm John. You've been listening to Troy Nunes is an Absolute podcast. Please be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and yeah, read the site. We got plenty more about the sudden and surprising Mark Coyle departure. But in the meantime, go Orange Lacrosse this weekend.
Orange.